When you golf in Missouri, the courses are so close, you'll spend more time on the fairway than the freeway. Reserve a tee time at the Regal Osage National, designed by the king himself, Arnold Palmer. Take a cart ride on the wild side in the breathtaking surrounds of Payne's Valley, designed by Tiger Woods. And after the back nine, there's still world-class dining and distilleries, shops and spas, museums and more. Find your new golf MO in Missouri. Start planning your golf getaway at visitmo.com.
Now at Verizon, we're locking in low prices for 3 years guaranteed on my plan. And you can get a single line for just $45 a month when you switch and bring your phone. That's our best price ever on unlimited welcome with autopay plus taxes and fees guaranteed for 3 years. Because at Verizon, we got you. Visit your local Indianapolis Verizon store today. $20 monthly promo credits apply over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Price guarantee applies to then current base monthly rate. Additional terms and conditions apply.
All right, welcome back to another episode of Friends from Work Plus. This is a podcast about the ever-expanding Marvel Cinematic Multiverse. And it's hosted by me, Kyle Sconewell, and my longtime friend from work, Robbie Earle. Thank you for supporting, using your hard-earned dollars to help support this podcast and allow Robbie and I to continue to do what we're doing. I mean that sincerely. Today is going to be a really interesting discussion because we've kind of closed the chapter on the original X-Men run with X3 last time. And then there's this epilogue, The Wolverine, from 2013. And as we've done so many times, Robbie, I think what would be really fun would be, let me kick us off with just some generic thoughts, and then we'll go through it. I'm going to try really hard to not make this a Days of Future Past episode or references to other films in the future, but I have watched Days of Future Past. As a positive for The Wolverine, or maybe it's just because I'm traveling and I have extra time, it did inspire me to, like, I'm in the universe now and I did want to see what happened in Days of Future Past. So partially because Days of Future Past was released in 2014, which, by the way, 2014 for superhero movies, man, holy cow. But also, it's only 1 year later. So something about the film, but also the tightness of the creation of these two got me in the right headspace to watch them both. But this is not a Days of Future Past episode.
Although I do want to say there, this made me feel even better about our watch order here, just because, like, everything you were just saying, I think this is such a clear connecting point between The Last Stand and Days of Future Past. And the release order was The Last Stand, then Origins, then First Class, then The Wolverine. And I feel like at the time when The Wolverine dropped, it wasn't really very clear where that slotted in to people, especially when...
Sure.
Because The Last Stand came out in 2006, and this is 2013, but it's the follow-up. So I thought this worked better for me.
I mean, until I watched it the other day, I was confused. Just like you're saying. I was one of those people that was like, what is The Wolverine?
Right.
I thought we did this story kind of thing, you know? Like, how is this so different from Origins? Well, now I understand. They're totally different times. But yeah, I'm with you. At the time, it was very confusing. I thought that this is a okay to pretty good movie. My big takeaway, though, is it does feel just a little bit peripheral. I think because it's the epilogue, you can't help but watch it and feel like, do I need this? And I'm excited to hear some arguments from you as to maybe why it is needed. You just talked about how it is a good glue between the two films. But on the negative side, I would say, I don't know that anything is ever a slam dunk here to where I'm like, wow, this is so unique, or this is so something we needed, or the movie just feels a little bit extra, and not extra in that it's not excess like the other guys, the American way. It's actually really restrained in a good way, but I just don't know that I needed it. Like, so far, once I got finished with the film, I still kind of have X2 is like the tier one film of this whole thing. I keep forgetting what percent I gave to all these, but, you know, that's tier one. So that's like a 90% to me. I do think there's a little bit of a gap between X2 and X1, where X1 is maybe like 80%. And then First Class is right there in tier two as well to me, of like 70% or 68%. Those two are closer, though. Then I think that this is the first tier three movie. Like, in our MCU rankings, we use four tiers. I think that's perfect now, because I think the Wolverine is like 68%, like just under First Class. Mm-hmm. I'd probably make a line of demarcation there between the two. And then I have X3 and Origins Wolverine below that as tier four films. You know, those would be in the 50 to 40 range.
Yeah.
To me. So
I think that's right.
I just felt like, here's my point. I thought it was a pretty good movie. I enjoyed it. I have nothing funny to bash it with. Like, there's nothing comically bad, but I just, on the negative side, felt like, I don't know that I really needed any of this. That's my opening statement.
No, I actually think we might be more or less on the same page here. This is one that I have not seen all the way through since probably right when it came out. I may have seen it again after theaters, but I feel like there have been a few times where I've started it and not stopped because I got bored, but just because it like I was going to start some kind of X-Men rewatch or something, or maybe it was whenever I was trying to figure out the watch order. But I say that because I do think this is a great example of a movie that the first two acts are significantly better to me than the third.
In general, you think the reveal of the grandfather being alive, the Iron Man suit, is all a little bit kind of weird?
Yeah, especially like the size of the Silver Samurai suit is strange to me. Like, it's like, I get it that it's supposed to be something that's he's able to take Logan down, but it's like so bulky and like it doesn't look like a suit that's like designed to keep that guy alive. It looks like he's like wearing a transformer. And so it took me out of whatever they were trying to root it in based on like the earlier scene where we kind of see the technology they have access to. Like, it was a little too far and too Saturday morning cartoon, because the rest of the movie isn't. Like, we've kind of talked about
right,
that.
Right. It's a little left field.
Yes. Yeah. It's like, if you're going to do that, like if you're going to make that the vibe, then I think you have to introduce that earlier on. But it's like the opening of this movie, like when he's in Nagasaki, the opening whenever we find him in the woods and the bear and the hunters, like, I really like all that. And I just think it starts to kind of go off the rails the further on it goes.
I, by the way, they referenced the Yakuza, uh-huh. Yakuza multiple times in this, and I couldn't help but think about Daredevil. Is that where your brain went?
Well,
I had to actually Google it because I was like, wait, is this a superhero thing or is it a real thing? I think it's a real thing.
It is a real thing.
They're referencing.
But yeah. I think it's funny you say that, because this movie is based primarily, I mean, it's a loose adaptation, but it's based on the Frank Miller Wolverine era. Chris Claremont and Frank Miller. And Frank Miller is also the one behind a lot of the Daredevil ninja stuff. So he's just, the guy loves him some ninjas.
Right. I thought about the ninjas just now. The ninjas here are less goofy than they are there for some reason to me. Let me tell you my other thing that I just
really enjoyed.
What
they needed was a really big hole.
Yeah, that's actually, well, they do push the Silver Samurai kind of off a cliff into a hole-ish. You know, maybe that's all it was.
Not big enough hole, though.
Not big enough. This is something I really liked. I do love whenever the film wrestles with the things that Logan should or would be wrestling with.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if the eternal life thing is fascinating, because you and I have on this podcast have had the conversation a lot about how, like, can Wolverine die? Remember that?
Right.
If he was to die, how? But then also the more metaphysical part of it. Does life have meaning if you live forever? Like, if he loses all the people that he loves, can he just fall in love with another person and live another full life again? If the X-Men are kind of gone, or they're not really doing the X-Men thing, or he's not involved in it, does he have a purpose? So I love this movie wrestling with that stuff.
Yeah.
I think that that's very realistic. I think Logan would be wrestling with that. And I think there's a pretty satisfying conclusion when he says, no, I'm a soldier, and leaves.
Yeah.
At the end. He goes through all that to realize he is a soldier and he can still help people, even if he feels like he doesn't have people to love as much. You know what I mean? Like, he can still help in different ways. I like that part of the whole film.
Well, even that moment of closure with Jean, I thought was powerful.
Like, yeah, agreed.
And that says something, because as we talked about last time, I don't think that moment was handled super well in the movie itself, her death. So I feel like it's always nice when you can see something come back and enhance a major plot point that is in need of enhancement. So I thought I liked that. And yeah, I really like the way you put that. And I won't repeat all of it, but I think that this is the first time that we are getting to really explore a different conflict within Logan, like a different struggle. For the longest time, it was all rooted in what happened to him whenever he had the adamantium procedure and his memory being gone. And it's like we circled around that for years, where it's like, that's the mystery in the first film. The second one, we kind of find out the answer to it. And then in Origins, it's all about that. It's like, it's either his past or it's him trying to like shed his past.
Yeah.
And here it's like, yeah, it's an actually personal struggle of like, yeah, there is this unique thing where he's been alive for a really long time. And
in that way, the movie is not unnecessary, as you said, as a glue between those two, because even X3, we talked about how we felt like he's kind of walking through that movie. The character not much happens for that character by way of growth. And as you mentioned, the Jean death was handled poorly. So to glue that to where he is in Days of Future Past, where in Days of Future Past, he's like the most mature, fully on board, like not gruff exterior. He's almost patient at times. And I think we did need in that way a movie to glue those two. And I think this does a pretty good job of that. Like him kind of leaving the X3 vibe, being burdened by Jean, not knowing how he fits. And by the end of the film, feeling like he has a better explanation of what he needs to do. He has a better understanding of what he needs to do. I think it's implied that he's going to go back to the X-Men. And then I think that really helps you understand where he's at the beginning of Days of Future Past.
Yeah, I thought his realization there, it's funny because we talk about how the series opens with him taking care of Rogue and how that kind of brings him to the point of being an X-Man. And then we talked about how that's really bookended by the end with the X-23 storyline and Logan. And I had forgotten how much of this movie is the same thing. Now there are parts of, I would say this works the least well of those three.
It's the weakest one. Yeah.
Especially like in that way. Like I remember being a little weirded out by his relationship with Mariko. And I was, again,
for sure.
I was weirded out by it again. But I do, like, I appreciate the fact that Mangold is, like, he's using that to, like, again, recenter the character after, like, if you are thinking release order for a moment and thinking, like, the last two versions of this character that people saw just did not really work. And so even though there are things here that also don't work, I am glad that it kind of, it corrected the, like, our perception of Logan ahead of Days of Future Past, to allow Days of Future Past to have like the version of the character that you're talking about. So I do like, I like both that he was doing that and the way that he went about it. But
right, I'm exactly with you, lockstep. Like, so like on paper and even the way he executed it is pretty good. But there is something about Mariko, Logan, and then his friend, who's also the future seer relationship, that I just,
Yukio.
I don't know. I feel a little off. It's a little off putting. I it's hard to explain. She's like maybe too loyal to him for what he's done to her or for her. But then while she is seemingly kind of maybe into him a little bit, he falls in love with Mariko, or at least Mariko provides some healing. So like, it's not bad. I'm not making fun of it, but I do feel a little bit off about those three sometimes.
Yeah. That's the like,
and then they have the ninja friend who's like kind of also into Mariko.
Yeah. You know? And like her ex, but then like, I could never figure out what his agenda was in this movie. Like
he is definitely the least necessary character. It, like, that's the one character I'm like, what, why?
Yeah.
Like I said, I wasn't gonna make fun of the movie. The only part I could make fun of, my wife and I were laughing so hard, is like in that first scene, how he's hiding on the roof. It's like, no one can see me, but he's just clearly sitting on an open roof. And it's like kind of like a whitish roof and he's wearing all black. And it's like, Logan sees him. You know, it's one of those like, oh, Logan saw me, but no one else can. And I'm like, you're just sitting up there. Like nobody would be like, why is there a ninja standing on the roof staring at us, you know, that kind of thing. There is some stuff like that I'm like, I don't know. And then at the end, he doesn't ultimately do a ton other than capture Logan and then profess his love to Marika, but is still working for the Poison Ivy lady, whatever her name is. And then there's like a disagreement there and Mariko slaps him. And then that's kind of the end of his life. I'm like, that was a weird character, right?
Yeah. I mean, I also like there were just a couple things that just don't click here for me. Like the relationship, I'm not going to belabor that. I think what's strange is it like every other one that I list, like all those other moments where he's kind of the protector, it's always kind of like a big brother and or fatherly thing. And I think what's weird here is it starts with that vibe, but then like gets more and more romantic, but it's weird because she, like the actor,
yes,
like she looks pretty young, and we know that Logan like knows her grandfather, like, and has been alive for centuries, and it just, which again, I get that means that it's all kind of relative because everyone's way younger than Logan, but I think
that's like, better put than what I said. It feels icky a little bit. Yeah,
it's just like I think that if the character had been like I never felt weird with Gene, obviously, because it feels more like they are at least like the actors look more of the same age. But I think like as Hugh Jackman, he's obviously not old in this movie, but it's like as he's moving more into the kind of like grizzled Wolverine, it gets even stranger.
Yeah. Okay. I don't think there's anything like majorly wrong with it, but yes, it feels strange throughout.
What did you think about Viper?
Viper. I called her Poison Ivy. It's a little weird, right?
Sure. Yeah, that's another thing that was weird to me.
It's a little bit weird. It's a little bit gross. I like her and the Ninja Hawkeye guy, you know?
Yeah.
I a little bit don't understand their necessity of being in the film. Like, could you tell me why, like, could they have made this film without either of those characters? Like, at the end, the ninja guy says, well, Viper is also still protecting the house of whatever, Yoshida, or I can't remember what it was, something like that. That's what he says to Mariko. But I guess what he means is that she's helping keep the grandfather alive. But do we ever even really know why? Like, do we know what her motivation is in that?
Yeah, that's a good question.
And do we know why the ninja guy is siding with her? Just because the ninja guy, I guess, knows grandfather is alive. And so he's protecting that.
Yeah. But
like, I don't know. I'm with you. It was a little bit weird, and I just don't know that it was needed, really.
Yeah, I'm open
to hearing opposite ideas.
Yeah, I mean, like, I see what they were doing, and like, I think that she served some important, like, at least she's the one that kind of takes his power away. But then I think what's weird is...
That could have been any scientist, though.
Yeah, it's not her. Like, I thought that was, like, her using her toxin, but it's not. It's some tech.
Right.
So, yeah, that could have been, like...
There are a couple of extraneous
pieces.
I hate whenever villains clarify that they did it.
Man,
like, I got it.
Yeah.
I already saw it. You don't need to tell me. You know who did that? I did.
Part
that.
Of it is I also don't... I don't really buy her performance. Like, it's a little, like... I don't know. It's a little, like, daytime television at times where I just don't...
Yeah.
It doesn't... Like
it's like a daytime television attempt to be sexy while being a bad person.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like it's funny that you say Poison Ivy because I feel like she is doing kind of like Uma Thurman played Poison Ivy in the Joel Schumacher 90s Batman, which was also terrible. But it's almost like she's doing an impression of that, except that movie is known for being extraordinarily intentionally campy, and this one isn't supposed to be. And that it goes back to the Silver Samurai thing, where I think maybe for me in general, like my overall impression of this movie, it's kind of at war with itself because you can see the version of James Mangold here that is going to make Logan, and that is in this movie. Like you get pieces of it, but then you also get some weird pieces of like things that would feel more at home in like Origins Wolverine.
Yep.
It like Viper that's is a character a like word. That.
That's a good word. I think at war with itself is such a good way to put it because I'm with you. The Nagasaki thing, the original grandfather thing, Logan wrestling with his immortality. Even when you're first introduced to his friend who can see the future, worried about him dying, him being poisoned, all of that like works. The samurai theme, the family drama, the dynamics between this super powerful, wealthy family feels like Shang-Chi kind of or something. Like all that works pretty well. And then the Viper, the Silver Samurai, the fact that the grandfather's still alive, the sucking of the power out of Logan's claws gets a little bit like, whoa, this is a different movie.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And the, like, I don't know, that technology is a little sus to me. Like, I'm like, what
is happening? You drill through. So they had to cut off his metal claws so that he could expose his normal claws. And then they're going to drill through the claws. And that's how they're sucking out his immortality power.
Like his healing power.
Like they're sucking
power.
Out a, like a a gene?
Yeah.
Through his claws? Yeah.
What's the significance of the claws there? Because here's
and it's instantaneous. Why not make it then that you're like taking his blood, but then you still have to do some experiments to make it to where it could help de-age you?
Yeah.
Like make it into a formula or something. But what's the technology that you're instantly sucking it out of him? And it's like a witch stuff with like Agatha kind of vibe.
Yeah, yeah.
But you're not a witch.
Well, and it's...
You know, there's no magic happening.
It's weird, too, because, like, it's not like Logan has, like, a de-aging power, necessarily. Like, I know that, like, he ages slowly because of the healing factor, but I don't, like, Logan doesn't look like a 20-year-old, which is how the grandfather looks after he's, like, taken the power, where I'm like, I'm not sure that, like, this is how that would work.
Your understanding would be that he would eventually die of old age, right? Maybe at 1,000 years old or 2,000 years old, right? That's okay. Yeah, yeah. Me too.
I think, I don't think
but,
that Logan's...
But I will say, I did like the whole bit of him earlier starting to lose some of his power just to see what Wolverine as a mortal would be like. And therefore, you do kind of feel some of the stakes early on a little bit more.
And
because
I remember
he's actually like, well, if he can't come back from this, is he that, you know, can he just run into the castle and stop everybody? No.
Yeah. I liked that. And it kind of reminded me, like, coming off of having seen Spider-Man 2 again recently, it's like the moment in that movie where he runs into the burning building, even though he doesn't have his powers. And it's kind of contrasting that with the burning building scene in the first film and kind of what it means to be a hero and the responsibility that you have and all that. And I felt like that was a great way of showing, you know, Logan's in this place where he feels like he has no purpose and he's guilty about killing Jean and feels basically like there's no reason for him to continue to be Wolverine. And I like, and the reason I make the Spider-Man 2 comparison is I like that whole piece of this as a, like, when he isn't his full self, he's not able to protect people and be the quote unquote soldier that he's finally willing to admit that he is at the end. And I do, like, I like that as a way of, like, he, the value in his power that he finds, it is a very Spider-Man thing. Like, I think the thing that gives him purpose and meaning is not, like, it's not about whether he gets to live forever or, like, what impact that has on him. It's instead, like, he has the ability to protect people and do the right thing and stand up for people that can't stand up for themselves. And it is, like, a very kind of classic superhero-y moment for a character that has not ever had that, like, particular arc. So I think you can only, like, Mangold has said that he felt like there was really no way to delve into the character further without stripping away the healing factor, because it was such a, like, almost what Taika used to say about Thor, where it's like when you have this character that is seemingly invincible and untouchable, like, how do you get the audience to connect and how do you actually tell an interesting story about that person, which is why Ragnarok is the breakdown of Thor that it is. And I think that this is it's ground that I think is retreaded and treaded more effectively in Logan, like I said, but I think that there's a different take on it here that I appreciate.
For sure. You know, we've talked a lot about the continuity side of this, and I've always thought of the continuity from the perspective of what little detail do they miss from a movie to movie basis, on a movie to movie basis.
Mm-hmm.
And yet I think it struck me with these last two films, I think it's a little bit more that it feels like they're lacking their Kevin Feige. They're lacking their center. They're lacking their master planner to mm-hmm. kind of lay some of the groundwork or ground rules of what has to happen. And so it feels like each entry in the X-Men universe is a new director coming in going, I want to do it this way, and just totally ignoring things that happened in a previous entry or are about to happen in the next entry, and then just expecting us as viewers to go, oh yeah, that makes sense. So even right here, a couple of things that I just, like, it's almost like offensive, like you said the last episode, where it's not just that you're ignoring it, you're like leaning into the opposite of what the previous film said. Like,
yeah.
Okay. On a positive side, I like how they leaned into Jean. Like, instead of reversing that Jean's alive or something like right. that, they kind of play with you for a second, thinking she might be, but then it's just a dream. But it's pretty much Logan. Like, that feels more like Rogue One, where they're actually filling in a gap that makes that death a little more effective now than it was if you just watched X3. So, on one hand, I'm like, kudos there. But then some of the little things, like, in the post-credit sequence, how is Charles okay? Again, like, they just, Charles rolls up and they both have their powers, Charles and Magneto. And there's just no comment other than, well, you're not the only one who's special, Logan. To Charles is now just back. Magneto is now just walking through an airport using his powers. The last thing we saw was X3, right? And Charles died. And Magneto had his power stripped away and was a human.
Yeah.
And the only nod is they just go, well, we have powers too. That's bullcrap, man.
Yeah. Like,
it's literally different. It's that James Mangold doesn't want to acknowledge X3. That's the difference. Whereas when the Marvel Cinematic Universe has a Thor Dark World, Kevin leans into it later.
Yeah.
He doesn't then go, because that was so bad, we're just going to pretend it doesn't exist. Although we'll see if that happens with Eternals. But because of that, he leans into it and makes an essential viewing and plays with the plot points and introduces the Infinity Stones in it and makes it a big deal in hindsight. This feels like the opposite. It's like, well, I didn't like that from X3, so I'm just going to make Charles alive.
Well, and in Mangold's defense, he did direct the post-credits scene, but I was curious about this. It was written by Simon Kinberg, who wrote X3.
Okay, I don't care who it was. Whoever did it.
But I think it's important who it was here, because I think that it was Singer who was trying to like undo the parts of Last Stand he didn't like to make the way for Days of Future Past. What's weird about this is if you finish this movie and didn't have a post-credits scene and you just start Days of Future Past and Magneto and Charles are there, you have no less information than you have here. Like, all we find out is that they are here, and then we see them with Logan in Days of Future Past. It's weird to me that, like, in neither of those projects, like, we never get any explanation of what happened between The Last Stand and now to get them back. Like, for the first time here, watching the credits
again, scene, Robbie, not just back alive and with powers, but also working together now.
Yeah, right. Yeah, which is also weird. Like, I think the other strange thing, and I won't get into this here because it's more of a Days of Future Past thing, but like it's part of why I like not having First Class right before this, is it's like I feel like there was some synergy in First Class was the movie that released prior to this. And then now we have these characters back in their older form. And then now we're going to Days of Future Past. But it's strange, too, because then once we get to Days of Future Past, not only does Singer break with what we got in X3, he also, like First Class, you know, ends with Charles and Magneto splitting. And basically, like, everything about the status quo at the end of First Class is, like, it's not undone, but they then have to explain why, like, even though they put Charles in a wheelchair, he's not now and all that. And it's the same stuff here, where, except even less explanation. Like, at least there, I think Singer wanted to hold on to some of what they established in First Class. But, like, is he implying, whenever he says you're not the only one with powers, like, is he implying that there's some other mutant that was able to resurrect him, and that's how? But or then what's so weird is
his own brain could prevent his death or something.
But why does he look the exact same, and why is he still in a wheelchair? Like,
I'm saying. I agree with you, dude. It's brutal.
It's just such a, like, the Magneto thing I'm okay with, because, you know, they make a point of the like, oh, he can chess move piece. The chess piece at the very end. But still, man, the other thing that I think we can kind of talk about here, because Days of Future Past, like, deals with this, well, it doesn't even deal with it. Like, there's a very, a key moment of this movie is him having both of the claws cut off. And now they're bone claws.
Oh my gosh. That was my other note that I was going to say. I wasn't going to talk about Days of Future Past, but the one thing I have to say, I remember I just said, I brought up that Charles is here. My other point, my part B, was there's a moment in Days of Future Past where Wolverine freaks out and throws out his claws and cuts Kitty. I just watched it. And they're metal claws.
Yeah.
And the whole point of the end of the Wolverine, is that he gets his metal claws cut off, and it kind of becomes like a cool throwback to the original character when he has to fight with his bone claws.
Yeah.
And yet, It's like Days of Future Past doesn't even care about that. And they just go, well, you'll just as a viewer understand that some point between these two films, he went and got Metal Claws reinstalled.
Which, like, the difference between this and the MCU is I think we would get, especially if it were like a Marcus McFeely MCU, we would get a line or two of like Magneto in Days of Future Past explaining something about like, you should be thanking me for putting the metal back on your claws or whatever. And like, oh, now we know. Okay, that's what happened. Like, yeah, makes sense. Adamantium, they could do that. It's not through his whole body, so he wouldn't have to have the surgery. He could just have his claws coated, whatever. Like, there are comic booky ways to do it. It's just annoying that they don't even try. And not only that,
they don't try.
In Days of Future Past, isn't there, because you've watched it more recently, but isn't there the moment when he wakes up in the 70s and his claws are bone because it's supposed to be pre-operation and he's kind of like thrown off by that for a second?
Right, which is implying that he was expecting them to be metal while he's still sorting out the timeline.
And that's weird if he was even if he, you know, does have Magneto or somehow, some other way it gets the metal back on his claws. I think that, you know, he had the bone claws again not that long ago. It's just kind of like none of it, it feels like there was no coordination between those projects except for this one.
Well, my only headcanon there, which this is not right, okay? I'm not arguing with you. I'm with you. I think it just lacked a master planner, a master builder. But I think the implication is that Days of Future Past is pretty significantly in the future, right? Like,
yeah,
I don't think it's 1 year after Wolverine, you know, because
Tokyo is still
totally normal. So maybe it's just like a genuine surprise of, you know, it's been a long time. Maybe it's been 20 years. Hold on. Yeah, that can't be right, though, because Kitty's not that much older.
Oh, that's the other weird thing. See, and Rogue.
So that's the timeline too that's totally broken is, yes, okay, if you use the younger actors that are in the old timeline, does that make sense? So not the Fassbender era actors.
Right.
But the actors from like Kitty, Rogue, Bobby, they're only like 3 years older, but the world has gone from a total normal society to like literally the end of the world.
Yeah.
Like the most post-apocalyptic thing you could possibly see, like totalitarian government, you know, like exiling people into camps.
And so, okay.
Remember this, but that's the beginning of the movie.
Yeah. Well, and I'm looking it up and apparently, cause I was curious, it is supposed to be a dystopian 2023. So, and
that's not again, continuity wise, you're asking me to buy that's realistic, that it would happen between the Wolverine and that.
Which I guess would be like 10 years if we're saying that the Wolverine took place in 2013 when it came out.
But hold on, because Kitty's not 10 years older.
Yeah, I know. That's what's, yeah. It's, and even then, Wolverine can't be like that. Like, also, if the grandfather was, you know, a 20-something kid in 1945, it can't be that far there has to be a good chunk of time that has passed between the Wolverine and Days of Future Past, like based on, because otherwise that guy would be like literally 100 years old whenever we see him.
And we're back to the original frustration, which is that there is no explanation, Robbie. There's no point in headcanning in it because they just didn't care. Like the guy who made Days of Future Past didn't care that the Wolverine was made. There's no other explanation other than that. Like there was no attempt. There was no effort to then try to tie that stuff in. Like the claws are a perfect example. You just don't care that movie was made. And so again, back to this movie. It doesn't make this movie bad because of that, right? But it's the whole overarching picture, I think, that got really draining for people, because the Wolverine as a standalone film is not terrible. And it does do some things that connect the two, like we're talking about. But then when the next film just comes along and goes, nah, forget it. that's not a good story. I don't want to tell that story. Then it's hard for fans to have buy-in to any of it. Like the consequences of the Wolverine, if he just has metal claws back. Or like,
yeah,
Kitty was in X3. That's cool. But why is she 2 years older in Days of Future Past? But the whole world is a post-apocalyptic, like nuclear war type thing. You know, anyways.
Yeah. No,
so that's the end of the conversation with the continuity. It doesn't make sense. This, I think we've laid out our argument over these episodes to why this was a huge misstep on that front. It doesn't mean that everything they ever did was a misstep.
There
were things about the Wolverine that were fun. But when you look at it from like the MCU comparison, it's not even worth talking about, to be honest.
No, it's just not the like. It's weird because anytime you have movies that are supposed to be in the same universe, but are like, if there is no central person like Feige, it's going to be a mess because, I mean, even in the DC universe, they dealt with that because it's not like Zack Snyder
or Star Wars, man.
Yeah. Yeah. That you have to have somebody in that role. And I think that with the X-Men stuff, it was so haphazard and they were always trying to kind of play catch up after. It's weird because it's like they're the ones that kick it off. But then after X2, they're always kind of like,
well, they saw the Dark Knight. They saw Iron Man. They saw the Avengers. And it's just like, oh, no.
You know? Which, you know, it's like, again, like 2014 seemed like it would be the turning point with Days of Future Past. But I don't think that became that. But that is for next time.
By the way, even though we've already recorded it, it is my most anticipated episode in this journey, probably since the first one or X2, just because I hadn't seen those.
Yeah.
Just because I think you and I are going to disagree on some stuff. Like so much of this is you and I on the same page. I think you and I are going to disagree on some stuff. And I'm just like I watched it last night and I can't wait to talk about it. So.
Wow. Have you listened back to our old episode?
I have not, and I think I'm not going to. I have a reason and a plan as to why I'm not going to. I want to still make this like necessary, you know, listening and viewing and not repeat the thoughts I had. But just from some of these conversations, I a little bit know some stuff that will be fun to talk about for sure.
Which by the way, I'm going to try to watch the Rogue cut. That I don't know that I've seen, so that will maybe add some interesting elements.
Yeah, and you can bring that with you because I forgot you said that and I didn't watch it. So you'll have to probably just inform me.
Yeah, I think like it'll be a good
if Annika hasn't watched it, we're apart right now. If she hasn't watched it yet, maybe I'll rewatch it with her on the Rogue.
Yeah. Okay. I was thinking with the Wolverine, and this is part of why I think I get disappointed by some of the third act shenanigans, especially when it is just Logan as a guy in Tokyo. This feels like a comic in a way that I really appreciate, and in a way that I'm realizing we don't get all that often. Like, it feels like here's like a classic Thor adventure. It's like, here's just Wolverine in a different setting with different characters exploring some different themes. And I thought, like, you know, I like that. And that's not like a commentary on what the MCU does too much of or too little of or whatever. But I do think, like, to the extent this was just, okay, you know who the character is. You enjoy watching the character. We're going to put him in a new setting, and it's not really going to factor into an overarching narrative. There's something kind of refreshing there.
Yeah, that is what this is. This is a classic Wolverine adventure. By the way, did you catch my? I said next time, baby. That was from Iron Man, you know, with
Rhodey. Oh, yeah.
We're just working a lot of these in today.
He never did get his next time.
No, I know. It almost feels kind of like, let's see, let me think of the MCU parallel to that. Maybe a little bit like Iron Man 3, kind of? where it is a bridge between two projects, but it's kind of just a classic Iron Man adventure. Like, you never really think, like, why isn't he called Captain America? You know, like, you're not looking for the connectivity. It's kind of just like, here's a chapter in Iron Man. That's kind of a parallel. I'm with you.
Yeah.
This is a classic Thor adventure where it's like, hey, he's in a different setting. Tokyo, totally different. Yep. And there's a part of that that my brain then interprets that as a little bit unnecessary, a little bit. But there's also a part that's what you're saying, which is if you're just looking for a fun story to put on a Saturday night, like maybe I don't want to do the work of all the other films, then sure.
And like maybe it doesn't, because then it doesn't have to carry the same weight. Like, this is a movie that I think is an interesting example of what the DC universe could have done. Like, whenever I've talked about, and they're kind of, you know, I think Gunn is moving into this in various ways, but like looking back at what they were doing in this period where they're coming off Superman and then they're going to now bring in the Batman versus Superman thing and try to immediately create a whole universe out of thin air. Like, I like this idea that you can just have movies that don't have to do that. Like, I think that was part of the appeal also of like the original Ant-Man, even though that kind of sets up Civil War. You know, and that introduces the Ant-Man character. So that's a little bit different, but it's like, I think that people do like sometimes when it's just like, because it makes the story feel more centered and focused, and you avoid some of the issues with that start with those like over bloated Spider-Man 3 type films.
Guardians 2 is probably the other example. Like, not in the scope of it that they're trying to literally stop gods and planets, but just in that disconnected, a fun adventure for the Guardians kind of thing, where you can kind of move them from one spot to another. It's not their original entry. It's not the introduction to them. Hey, my last note, by the way, too, is just that I thought that everything looked pretty good visually and that generally the performances were pretty good. I didn't feel like, other than maybe Viper, many of the performances pulled me out. So just as a side note, like, it feels like they've kind of cleared some of those hurdles they were hitting, like those speed bumps they were hitting a few projects ago with some of that stuff.
I think that's right.
Feels like we're past it. Yeah.
Yeah, I thought that the performances were good, and it was just like it was fun to watch, like talking about a movie where you just set a character in an interesting situation. Like, there's a reason why the Frank Miller, you know, Wolverine goes and becomes a samurai thing works. It's just fun. Like, those, not the final Silver Samurai battle, but all the like even the one with Logan and her dad, where it's like he's kind of getting beaten by this guy. Like, if he didn't have his healing power, he would have been dead several times. But it's like,
which is so appropriate, I think.
Yeah. Like, it creates some really interesting moments, both like thematically and also just visually. Like, it was a fun, like, one of the most, like, if you just want to watch Wolverine be Wolverine, like, this is about as good as it gets there. Like, I think that there are moments in X2 that are still stand above this for me, but like as a whole, I think it's hard to complain about the amount of like fun Wolverine action scenes in this one. And that's not even talking about like the extended R-rated version that they put out.
100%. I think when the casual fan thinks of Wolverine, everyone thinks of the claws as his superpower. That's where your head goes right away. But I really like that his real superpower is the healing. Because if you think back to all his fighting, he's not like crazy fast. He doesn't fly. He's not crazy agile. Yes, he's strong, but I don't think it's like Captain America strong, like super strength. He's just a strong dude who had metal injected into him. And that's all really important and cool. And that's like what makes Wolverine Wolverine when you think of it. But really, the superpower is the healing, because his battles are always just, I can run right at you, even if you're shooting me. And this movie dealing so much with that, by taking it away, by how the ninjas ultimately stop him with all the arrows and the pulleys. Like, all of that, I think, yeah, is really cool. And then I love, like I said, going back to the very first point and what you just said, exploring the idea of if you take the healing power away, what is he? Like, he's not a sharpshooter. He's not any of those things, you know?
Uh-huh.
And so he can't just run at cars anymore if they can shoot him in the leg and he's not going to heal. I love that. That's his true superpower, healing.
And even his fighting style, how it's like never, he's never had to be agile or dodge anything. Like,
right. Like, we've never been given any indication that he's trained as like a samurai, right? Or like a,
right.
like a Navy SEAL or something, right? He's gone in the military, but like, it's still just been as Wolverine, just kind of run at him, claw him, you know?
Yeah, because
so
I mean, that's
like
the
he's
whole
not
thing.
Some trained he's an assassin. Animal. He's not Black Widow.
Yeah. Yeah, which I really like that. Like, that's a great place to end the conversation today, because I feel like that sets him up also like a, like I like him going into Days of Future Past, having had the kind of realization and the growth that he had in this movie. But I also like remembering that at his core, like, even like we see him more patient, we see him willing to sacrifice, we see him like having the benefit of all the lessons that this character has learned. But I like that they don't try to make him into something that he's not. Like, they don't, like, if anything, I like being reminded of Wolverine's limitations here going into a new movie, instead of him being like continually leveled up or something like Dragon Ball Z style. Like, I think it's a nice, again, if anything, this movie is kind of a nice centering point for this character, and sets up, like, even though it doesn't have the kind of connective tissue that it could have with Days of Future Past or the movies before, I do think that Days of Future Past benefits from some of the work that they do here, in part, again, thematically, and in part, even just visually.
Yep. I could not have said it better myself. You all are the freaking best, and I love you. We'll see you next time here on Friends from Work.
Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull, Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern. Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90, exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.
Now at Verizon, we're locking in low prices for 3 years guaranteed on my plan. And you can get a single line for just $45 a month when you switch and bring your phone. That's our best price ever on unlimited welcome, with autopay plus taxes and fees, guaranteed for 3 years. Because at Verizon, we got you. Visit your local Indianapolis Verizon store today. $20 monthly promo credits apply over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Price guarantee applies to then current base monthly rate. Additional terms and conditions apply.